America is changing, and so is the world.
But what's happening in America isn't just the cause of global upheaval. It's also a symptom of disruption that's happening everywhere.
I'm Asma Khalid in Washington, D.C.
I'm Tristan Redman in London, and this is The Global Story.
Every weekday, we'll bring you a story from this intersection, where the world and America meet.
Listen on bbc.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Chicago, it's Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Stick around for a breakdown of the latest local news in and around Chicago after the conversation that you just clicked on. But before we get to that interview about the work underway to preserve the Emmett Till and Mamie Till Mobley House in West Woodlawn as a museum and memorial, let's peel the curtain back just a bit. In the Loop engineer Ethan Schwab is here with me. Hey, Ethan.
Hey, Sasha.
So today's segment's pretty cool, Ethan, because it wraps up this four-part series that we started on our old WBEZ show, Reset. Remember that?
Yeah,
we took a summer tour of these different historic homes in the Chicago area with our architecture expert, Dennis Rodkin. And you came out with us for at least one of the steps,
yeah,
didn't you?
Yeah, I came out for one, the Charnley Persky House.
Oh, yes. That was part three of four.
Exactly. Yeah. That was a collaboration between Lewis Sullivan and Frank Lloyd Wright.
Yes.
Yeah, that building was designed under Lewis Sullivan's name.
Yes.
But Frank Lloyd Wright was a draftsman, I think.
There was some whole confusion, but I mean, the end result, though, is like a really magical looking place.
Oh, beautiful.
Especially on that block that it's on. Like, it's like one of these things is not like the other.
Yeah, early modernist design. And I remember like walking in there and seeing that incredible skylight that just like peered through the entire building.
Yes. And before
super
you
cool.
even walked in, that front door was just a striking statement. And so when we got the chance to launch this brand new show, In the Loop, I thought, well, of course we want to finish what we started because we always wanted to do four parts. Didn't
we? Definitely.
Yeah. So this time around, we headed to West Woodlawn. And, you know, there's some deep, painful history, obviously, connected to Emmett Till and the Emmett Till House. Mm-hmm. And so we dug into the renovation work that's being done to preserve it. And we got the chance to talk to Emmett's cousin, Ollie Gordon. That's probably the coolest part of this. She lived in the house when she was, 7 years old? And she lived there from the age of 2 to 7. And she was 7 when he was murdered.
Yeah. And she had so many amazing memories from the childhood, like growing up next to Emmett Till. Really wild. Her storytelling was really priceless.
Yeah, she talked about his little wagon and how he used to always help people with groceries or what have you. And his dog named Mike.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the things that stuck with me.
Right.
Yeah. So, well, let's get into it. Ethan, thanks for checking in.
No problem.
At the table, Dennis Rodkin, residential real estate reporter for Crane Chicago Business, and Ollie Gordon, who's a cousin of Emmett Till and former resident of the Emmett Till House. Dennis started us off with an overview of the renovation plans.
This is not one you can visit yet, but at some point it will become, I would imagine, a very visited house. Fundraising starts next year, and the opening is at the moment scheduled for 2028.
Okay.
To restore this former two-flat. The interior is in demolition condition. It had gone through several ownerships before Blacks and Green, the organization turning it into a museum, acquired it a few years ago. And I guess it was subpar renovation. And so a lot of it has either been removed or not lasted.
Yeah.
So they need to redo the entire interior. We'll talk about some of the work that has already happened on the exterior. And there's also a pretty significant sculpture coming.
Yeah.
To the outdoors.
So for those who haven't seen the house, describe it for us, Dennis.
Well, if you've seen a red brick two flat anywhere in Chicago, you have seen this building.
It's a classic.
Yeah. It's extraordinary for being so ordinary. This is a block of South St. Lawrence in West Woodlawn, where there are other two flats. There are also other historical buildings. This is a great red brick two flat. Later, it was a three flat. There was an apartment in the basement. But in 1955, still a two flat, as built in 1890, has a beautiful white metal cornice wrap at the top, detailed, the hammered detail that you see in a lot of those. Mm-hmm. And as I understand it, that's original from the 1890s when the building was built.
Wow.
And an interesting thing about this is that the building has been, Blacks and Greens research has determined that this building has been Black owned since the 1910s. This was not a neighborhood, this was not a piece of the neighborhood where there were covenants keeping mm-hmm. out Black residents. And there was a Black family that bought it in about 1916, which is very rare.
Wow. And of course, I mentioned the heaviness behind this property, right? The Till House is forever going to be marked by a tragedy, right? It's always going to be that place where Emmett, who was just a teenager at the time, left his mom to go visit family in Mississippi for the summer, only to be brutally murdered days later.
And I'll tell you, Sasha, I stood in the bedroom. Again, it's in demolition condition, but I stood in that second floor bedroom where Emmett would have slept the night before he boarded the train, where he spent that summer. And I've read about him as a young man, 14 years old, who liked to tell jokes, liked to be told jokes. And I was sort of imagining this young guy in this room in 1955, of course, having no idea what's to come,
right.
but probably reading some jokes, maybe remembering some jokes his friends had told him in recent days. And that, it's sort of hard to wrap your head around it when you know what came later. But I think that is part of the goal. I learned from Blacks in Green that part of the goal is to describe him as a person, to describe the family who lived there as people, mm-hmm. members of the Great Migration who came up from Mississippi, and really talk about the life of the family and Emmett Till.
Yeah.
We know there are a lot of memorials to the death of Emmett Till, and part of what they want to do is say, here's everything that came before.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of family, I'm looking at you, Miss Ollie, because you also lived in that West Woodlawn house when you were just a wee tot, right? You were a young child. What are some of your early memories of being there?
My early memories, my parents migrated from Mississippi to that particular building when I was two. So I lived in the house with Emmett for approximately 5 years before he was taken away. My memories from, let's say by the time I was getting ready to go to school, getting ready to go into maybe kindergarten,
mm-hmm.
I remember his mother specifically making certain that we knew our phone number, because we did have a phone,
yes.
and the address. And I remember it like a drill all the time.
Really?
You know, this is something you will know. And I can remember Emmett, he was more like a sibling than a cousin, because it was four of us, I think, mm-hmm. at the time. And he was very protective. I was the only girl, so, you know, so I had three brothers, so, and Emmett, now there's four.
So he was like a protective big brother.
Yes. He was very, very protective. I mean, like I said, he was a prankster. He was a jokester. He just loved to make people laugh. And he could torment me, I'm going to say. You know how siblings can be.
Yes,
but nobody else had better do it, because they were going to have to answer to him.
Mm.
He had a dog named Mike. I think it was a golden retriever. You don't hear many people talk about that.
A dog named Mike.
Yes, wow. I remember Mike very well.
Yeah, but I love these memories because this is really truly giving us the humanity, right? So what Dennis was just talking about with the objective here is for this restoration project is bringing the human piece of this story back in.
And that's always been my concern. He was a human. Yes, human. Let's talk a life before death. Everybody thinks of him after death.
This is In the Loop. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. And if you just got here, we're learning more about restoration work that's being done to the Emmett Till and Mamie Till Mobley House Museum for our What's That Building series. In the studio, we've got Dennis Rodkin, who's In the Loop's architecture sleuth, and Ollie Gordon, who's a cousin of Emmett Till and a former resident of the house. And joining us now is Willie Douglas, who's an organizer and instructor for the Bricklayers and Allied Craft Workers Local 21. Willie, let's bring you into the conversation here because you were contracted years ago, was it, to do some work for the house?
First of all, I just want to say thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
It's a pleasure being here with you all today. So basically, the way that I came into contact with this project was I am a almost 20-year member of the BAC. I'm a third-generation tug pointer. I worked in the field for various union contractors for about 16 years. And in 2021, I became an instructor at our training center that's located in Addison, Illinois.
Okay.
My supervisor, Hector Arlano, who is the director of Tug Pointers, he found out about the job, being granted landmark status back in 2021. Once he found out about that, he reached out to the people that purchased the building, and they put their heads together, and, you know, we were able to work it out to where we would be able to not only do the work, but do the work at no cost.
Wow.
I was with Hector one day, and he said, hey, there's a project that I want you to take a look at, and I want you to put a crew together, and we're going to use it as a training experience for our apprentices. And when he told me what it was instantly familiar with it. I mean, I have family.
Right, when they say it's the Emmett Till and Mamie Till Mobley house.
Yeah, so I knew exactly what it was, where it was. I mean, I have family that grew up in that area. I played in that area a little bit as a child. My parents went to school in that area. So it was a no-brainer for me. It was nothing to think about.
Yeah, so how long did your team work on the house? Was it over a couple of summers?
So we started on July of 2023, and we finished our scope of work in November of last year.
Of the exterior?
Yes, of the exterior. House.
So tell me what you were doing.
So our scope of work consisted of grinding out and repointing the mortar joints.
What does 100%. That mean?
So that's a good question. So basically, tug pointing is you have the joints in between the bricks. Those are called mortar joints. OK, and what happens is over time, the mortar, whether it be due to weather, shifting of the structure or anything like that, or if it's just not properly, there's not a proper filtration system, what will happen is the mortar will start to crack. Or it'll just get old mm-hmm. over time. If it just hasn't been touched since it was first built, it'll just get old and start to crack.
Right.
And what also happens is it starts to fall out, leaving voids. Being from the Midwest, you know, Chicagoland, we get some really harsh winters. So you have freeze and thaw. And then after that, it just leaves a whole bunch of issues.
Yeah.
You know, heat escaping, water getting in, that type of stuff. So what we do is we come out and we remove the dead mortar by whether it be by cutting it out with a grinder or maybe sometimes we have to chip it out or depending on if it could be a historical project where they want you to take extra special care.
Right.
You may even have to go back old school with the hammer and chisel. So,
yeah. Oh, wow. So, interesting.
So once we have all of that out, we come back and we repoint it with new mortar, which for this project, which was a historical landmark project, we did have to match the mortar. We couldn't just use anything.
Right, because what it looks like really matters in a case like
yes,
this, right?
We're
like preservation with a capital P.
Absolutely,
here.
Yeah. Landmarks wanted it to be as close to its original state as possible. So we, in conjunction with the architect on the job site, with the different contractors that we used and some of our vendors, we were able to match and recreate that look. Another thing that we were also able to do through some of our connections with some of the other building trades, we were able to get the roofers union, to contact one of their minority contractors who was actually from the area. They donated the work as well as the material to put on a brand new roof.
Wow, that's a lot. I mean, have you taken a chance to swing by the home recently, Ms. Ali? Have you seen any of the work? Maybe give us your vision for what you would like this to look like in the end.
I have seen some of the work. From the beginning, and then we have tours. Sometimes people come in mm-hmm. and they go by just to see what the progress is. And then on the property next to it, on Emmett's birthday every year, they didn't do it this year, they would have, Blacks and Greens would have like a ice cream social. I work as a consultant with Black and Greens.
Okay.
You know, as they restore and do the history of the people that lived in what have you. And we're looking at some old photographs and things that I might have or other family members might have at this point, because I'm the oldest living relative that actually lived in that building and was living there when Emmett was taken.
Right.
So I do get by there. I look at it as it's going, and I'm like amazed, you know, from when I saw it, like in 20, I think it was like 10 years ago. I did speak with the family that was living on the first floor. They had restored the first floor, but they had not done the second floor. They were just getting ready to work on it.
So Dennis, Blacks and Green, as you've mentioned in your article, that's up now at WBEZ.org. They still got some work to do to get this finished. How are they going to do that? Because they need more money.
They need $6.5 million. A fundraising campaign starts next year. The house, as we've said, is in pretty bad condition inside. When Miss Ollie was talking about these people living there, losing it in foreclosure, in the 21st century, it changed hands three or four times, I think possibly five times, before it went to Blacks and Green, lost in foreclosure. And I actually spoke to those investors you're talking about who bought it, and they had no idea. By that time, Emmett Till's name had really sort of disappeared from the house, though his name is on the school right down the block, and members of the family and others knew it was there. So there needs to be some reminder so that that doesn't happen again. And one of the pieces of Blacks and Green's plan is, to me, a very moving idea. Richard Hunt, a Black Chicago sculptor who died a few years ago, one of the last things he was working on was the model for a memorial to Emmett Till to go on this property. And one of the reasons that's a very significant move is that in 1955, Richard Hunt lived in the same neighborhood as Emmett Till, attended the funeral for Emmett Till, which is a seminal event in the civil rights movement. Richard Hunt was in his teens, attends the funeral, goes home and sculpts his first metal sculpture, which is an image of Emmett Till's mutilated head called Hero's Head.
Mm-hmm.
That's 1955. And then in the 2020s, at the end of a very distinguished career, a career Emmett Till was not allowed to have, Richard Hunt designs a memorial to go at Emmett Till's house, and that's called Hero Ascending.
Ah, so they'll put that in sort of that empty lot.
In that empty lot
next door. Willie, you're hearing all these stories, and I love that you shared some of, you know, the impact of Emmett's story on your life growing up when you first had to learn about what had happened. How does that feel to have been part of history?
This is probably one of the most important things I've ever been a part of in my life. Hands down. And I think that to see how much it meant to not only the neighborhood, because that area, a lot of times when you hear about it, is not for anything good.
That's right.
You know, so to meet all of these wonderful people that I've been able to meet since being able to be a part of this is very touching for me. And I also feel like it was a very big thing for some of our other union members that were a part of this. You know, it's a very eye-opening project and to be a part of.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked to multiple people about this. I've spoken to people at different conferences and conventions about it. And every time I tell them that I was a part of, you know, they always want to know more. They always want to know more. They always want to know how they can contribute and things of that nature.
Yeah, and they can certainly find out more from Dennis's great story. It's up online. Once again, it's at WBEZ.org. Dennis Rodkin is a Crane Chicago Business residential real estate reporter. Willie Douglas is an organizer and instructor with BAC Local 21. And Ollie Gordon is a cousin of Emmett Till and a former resident of the Emmett Till and Mamie Till Mobley House Museum. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Now it's time to catch you up on the big stories of the day. We checked in with WBEZ news anchor Claire Lane, reporter and anchor Araceli Gomez-Aldana, and city government and politics reporter Mariah Wolfel joined us from City Hall. Claire started with news about disaster relief funding in Illinois.
So we should just remind folks, too, that this was in 2023, July to be specific. About 9 inches of rain fell very quickly across the city. Many basements were totally wrecked. Many homes totally wrecked. A BEZ analysis actually found more than 12,000 basement flooding reports were filed between July 2nd and July 18th of that year. So pretty significant. Many efforts were made since then to get federal help with some of this damage because the state really couldn't, you know, come up with all the cash. And Illinois has essentially won a lawsuit over disaster relief funding. The Trump administration did attempt to do some wheeling and dealing by withholding nearly $2 billion in disaster relief funds from states that have sanctuary cities, Illinois being one of those states. So Trump's executive order aimed to force these states to coordinate with federal immigration officials in exchange for what he was calling Homeland Security grants. So a judge, this was William E. Smith, rejected that, called it arbitrary conditions laid out by the president, saying that that order was essentially unconstitutional. So the money's going to come in.
Yeah, well, I guess a victory here for him in another case here, because the federal government is going to be pulling some money from Chicago public schools. This is over its Black Student Success Plan that we talked about a few days ago, right?
Yes, exactly. So the federal Department of Ed's Office of Civil Rights had demanded that CPS end its Black Student Success Plan last week, saying that it violates anti-discrimination laws. We should remind people, too, that the Black Student Success Plan was the product of an effort to foster environments for Black students to feel empowered, right? Ultimately improving their academic outcomes. So the district is keeping that plan. They said no to that. And they're going to lose about $8 million as a result. But it is a relatively small amount in relation to, mind you, CPS's $10 billion budget. But folks are saying that the law could signal that the Trump administration is willing to come after more of CPS's federal funding. So something will continue to watch.
Oh, yeah. I don't think it's over. Yeah. Well, let's switch gears, Araceli, because as the Chicago area continues to see ICE agents arresting people, you have still been answering questions from listeners and readers. And you answered this question: what documents should someone carry to establish their citizenship?
Yeah. And I'll say the person who asked this question wanted to remain anonymous because they're fearful of all the stuff that's going on.
Rightfully so.
Yeah. And so I spoke to Ed Yonka from the ACLU of Illinois, and he had this to say. He said, you should be carrying copies.
Our best recommendation to people would be to carry a copy of your passport or a real ID.
And that should suffice, just the verification that you are here legally, you're a U.S. citizen. But Yonka did say that he gives this advice with mixed feelings. He says it feels troubling to let, you know, citizens of the U.S. to say carry around your papers. But he also says he recommends it because the alternate, the what could happen is you could be detained and you don't want to do that.
Absolutely not. Yeah. Well, let's pull you in here, Mariah. Thank you again for joining us from City Hall. We've got a full meeting of Chicago alderpeople starting shortly. So what are the top agenda items?
Well, there's a lot on the docket today. It's going to be a very long meeting. The council's taking up, I have a bit of a sore throat, a $90 million settlement that we've covered last week for victims of disgraced former police commander Ronald Watts. Ronald Watts. And that's, you know, one of the biggest police settlements in the city's history. It covers around 180 cases. And so the council is going to vote on that. They're going to vote on preservation of housing in and around the Obama Center because people fear displacement and rising rents as that major development kind of takes root and gears up to open. And they're also going to take up a measure that would allow Chicago residents to create coach houses and other so-called granny flats, basically, you know, turning your basement into apartment to rent or turning your garage into a coach house. That's not allowed throughout the city of Chicago, except for in 5 pilot zone areas. But that will be kind of citywide, but with some restrictions, aldermanic restrictions. So big, really full docket. On top of that, the mayor is trying to push a reorganization of the city council committee chairs after the city council's dean, Walter Burnett, stepped down. So
Wow.
The agenda is not lacking.
It's not lacking. It sounds like a long day for you, too.
Yeah, unfortunately.
With that sore throat. Again, bless you for joining us this morning. And you mentioned there that effort regarding the Obama Presidential Center to sort of to slow down displacement and gentrification. Of course, some longtime residents and homeowners in South Shore are speaking out there. I drive by that place almost daily. When is it expected to be finished, Mariah? Do we know?
I think it's expected to open in 2026. I'm not sure what quarter.
Okay, so it's coming soon. I do see some progress happening there. It is looking like it is going to open very soon. So, Mariah, you talked there about the granny flats. Anything more on the proposed ordinance that we talked about earlier this week to allow dogs in restaurants?
So that'll be introduced today, and then it will need to go through committee, and then, you know, the earliest the council could take it up if you know, it gets a committee hearing in the next month would be October. And yeah, that's a fun one to allow dogs in restaurants.
Dogs in restaurants while you're eating. Yeah.
And drinking.
Okay.
And barking.
Uh-huh. Claire, Chicago has been rooting for the Leo Catholic High School choir. Oh, looks like it wasn't meant to be.
They came up short. This is the all-boys choir. They were competing on America's Got Talent. They ended up getting fourth place, so no million-dollar prize.
What? Congratulations to Catholic High School.
And they represented the city quite well. They impressed the Bears. They impressed Common, the rapper, shouted them out in a video.
So good.
And Simon Cowell gave them lots of praise, lots of support. They ended up losing to a woman who actually competed when she was 10 years old on the show.
Oh, wow.
And then came back 20 years later, sang again, and now she's pregnant. So what tough act to follow. I think they call that
for her
in show business.
No, they Leo did Catholic, so well.
Leo Catholic High School, first in my heart, I would watch, and I would watch the day after because I don't like commercials. And literally, I can't watch without smiling. First of all, they're cool.
Yeah, very
so
cool.
So much
they're
energy.
So
they're
cool. Song choices.
So
Imagine
cool. Imagine Dragons, Fall Out Boy.
Yes.
And
so
choreography,
good.
Yeah.
Just very, very, very good. I mean, they should be so proud of themselves. I really, really hope they're proud. Did you watch, Mariah?
I didn't, but that's amazing. You know, that might be my way of winding down tonight after the
catch up.
Great idea.
Absolutely. So meanwhile, the plaudits continue to roll in for Bears quarterback Caleb Williams.
Yes, he actually was awarded NFC Offensive Player of the Week.
Woo-hoo!
For his performance Sunday against the Cowboys. He threw for 298 yards, got four touchdowns. And it's just the first time a second-year QB has been named Offensive Player on the Week. Also, the Wiener Circle on the north side gave up, I think, up to 3,000 hot dogs. They bet big on Williams, said that if he got these TDs, they would give out the dogs. So Williams was getting a lot of love from Chicago this week, and we'll see if he can get it done again against the Raiders
Sunday. Chicagoans love football and hot dogs.
I love giving Claire the opportunity to talk about hot dogs every single day at the start of this show. Any other stories you're watching, Claire?
Yeah, this is a coalition of attorneys general have filed a preliminary injunction this morning to block the Trump administration from defunding Planned Parenthood, also other health centers that provide abortions. This includes Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul. In a statement, Raoul is saying the loss of federal funding, you know, would result in Americans foregoing critical preventative care like screenings for cancer. He's also saying, emphasizing really, that federal dollars are not used to pay for abortion care.
That's right.
So this is a pretty big deal this morning as well.
Mm-hmm. All right, Araceli, back to the questions that you are answering from listeners about federal agents here in the Chicago area. You got this question. This was from Mele Ortiz in Rogers Park.
I was wondering if there are different laws and rights regarding interactions with these newly arrived agents, since they aren't from local organizations.
Good question. What did you find, Araceli?
Yeah, again, I called up Ed Yonkin from ACLU of Illinois, and he said you have the same rights. So the right to remain silent, you don't have to answer any questions, the right to refuse a search of yourself, your home, your car. And, you know, really what he said is, like, the difference here is, here in Chicago, we are a sanctuary city, so local law enforcement usually isn't asking about immigration status, whereas a federal officer could ask what your federal immigration status is. If you are a U.S. citizen or here legally, you should just answer yes, and then they might
say, okay, can you prove it? You can prove it in some way. Mm-hmm. But really, the laws are the same. You're still protected. And I know that a lot of advocates are going around like explaining what your law, or what your rights are, and giving out cards, yeah, of, you know, to people. But I think for people who are here that aren't immigrants, it's also just a good, you know, kind of reminder, yeah, of what your rights when you encounter law enforcement.
Yeah, and what sticks to me too is what you said a moment ago, just about, like, you know, for immigrants, walk with those copies, yes, of your documents.
Yeah, it's important.
Because you never know when you'll have to pull that out.
And it's important to do copies, because not the real document. You don't want to lose it. Maybe it gets stolen, confiscated.
Absolutely.
You should just be safe.
It will be
a
headache trying to get that,
get
another version of that.
We all know that.
Yeah. What other questions are you looking at?
So one of the other questions that I'm kind of turning to is, really, people are asking, so what happens if someone does get detained and gets processed? Like, what happens after that? I think we hear, you know, DHS talking about how many arrests they've made and stuff like that. So what happens after that? So I'll look into that.
Mm-hmm.
And if people are listening and they have questions, you can visit wbez.org/guard. There's many ways to contact us. Leave us a voicemail, call us, I don't know.
Yes.
Leave a comment on Instagram.
Fabulous. And sure, those questions will keep pouring in, because this is a time of so much uncertainty. People have questions on their minds. As we wrap up here, Mariah, aside from what's going on in the city council meeting today that's going to keep you tied up for the rest of Thursday, what other city hall stories are you keeping an eye on?
Well, those are the main ones, but you know, everyone should be aware that, you know, we're about to get into budget season. The mayor in mid-October is going to announce how he's going to close the city's $1.15 billion gap. And so is that a property tax hike? Is that a new form of revenue? And so that's like kind of what everyone is oriented to. And this is kind of like the last, the city council non-budget business that will really, you know, this is a big one, and then it's all sights set on the budget.
This episode of In the Loop was produced by me, Sasha Ann Simons, and edited by Ethan Schwab. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, just head to wbez.org/in the loop. Thanks for listening.